The following dramatization is based on an actual golfing event by Cody last week on the home course.
The fog was thick enough to choke a bunker. Fairways stretched out like alleys you didn't want to walk down after the dark. Name's Mulligan Malone. Gumshoe by trade, golfer by compulsion. The case? A missing birdie. Slipped my grasp in the back nine last week, and I've been chasing it ever since. First stop, the sand trap. Dirty character, always burying the evidence. Then the water hazard, slick operator, deep, cold, and silent. Even the flag was swaying like it had something to hide. But every lead, dead. Then I spotted her, the long par five. Trouble in a green dress. She wasn't going to give up easy. I teed it high, swung the driver. Fairway, dead center. Six iron next, hot on the trail, one step closer. Pulled the wedge, let it fly. She landed soft, rolled sweet, and stopped less than a foot from the hole. Easy tap in birdie. Just like that, this case was closed. In this game, you don't find the birdie. The birdie finds you. This is For the Record.
Golf, the hardest game we love to play. These are the ramblings of three nerdy golfers.
Our continuing mission? Explore strange new swing techniques to seek out lower handicaps and awesome golf courses.
And to boldly swing where a safe layup would have been the smarter choice.
Welcome to another episode of For the Record. It looks like we had an exciting week. There's a lot to talk about today, including large spiders. So if you're scared of spiders, maybe, you know, skip ahead. We also have a provocative talk nerdy to me, and we're going to be looking at Birdie Watch. So we're excited about it.
So round recap, John Paul, you have had your surgery. It's been a couple of months, or a couple of weeks, I guess. How are you feeling? What percentage do you feel like you've gotten back to your game?
Well, I think it's an interesting question. I'm going to say I will be 8 weeks out of surgery on this coming Monday. So then I will officially be to the place where I don't have restrictions, so to speak, and I can go ahead and do anything that I like. And so I feel pain. I'm kind of sore today, but I feel pain-wise that I'm in a really good place. And so I was technically swinging the club a little bit faster today, a little bit harder. If I had to ask about how much of my game I've got back, that's a hard question to ask because it was so bad for so long.
Well, no, less that, more like in recovery, you had to say like, oh, I'm only swinging 50% swing. Yeah. What percentage do you have back?
I would have said today I was technically striving for about 85%, but I overswung a few times.
From an outside observer, I'd say that there were more than a few shots where you were hitting a normal 100% shot.
And I would agree. And that's why I can feel it.
And I feel like the last drive in particular, you really went for that.
Yeah. And there were some motivating factors behind there, which we'll get to later. But basically what it boils down to is I feel like I can get the power behind it, but there's a ton of rust. Like there, it's a total feel, and it's not just rust from the surgery. It's rust from before the surgery because I haven't had my normal swing in a long time. So finding the bottom of my swing arc and getting back on plane and things of that nature, it's just going to take time.
What is normal anymore? Because if you trained yourself to swing so differently with the pain,
yeah,
and now that that's not there, it's got to feel like a completely new foreign swing, right?
It really does. And I think the key to moving forward is maybe not trying to go backwards. It's just exploring what's there now. And I haven't had enough time to get anything that's consistently repeatable yet. But I'll get there.
Well, I mean, you talked about wanting to chase more speed.
Yep.
Doing what you were doing before is not going to get you there.
No.
So I wouldn't go back to what you were doing, chase speed, and then fix it. Just go with what you're at now and adjust.
Yeah, like you were talking earlier, I've got a couple of free golf lessons sitting on a punch card in my wallet. And I was really reluctant to use them because every time I have a golf lesson, the instructor finds a way to break my swing irreparably and I can't golf for like 2 months. And so I'm reticent to do that. But in this situation, knowing that I'm going to try and chase speed, probably just at the beginning of summer next year, I want to burn one of those lessons and go in and have a driver session after I've tried to get a repeatable swing, just so that I can have a professional look at the setup on my driver. I've learned my lesson. I'm not adjusting the weights or the loft or anything on that driver myself. I want a professional to do it. But I was fitted for that while injured, and I guarantee there's going to need to be some adjustments.
So John Paul just said that every time he goes and does a fitting or a lesson, it kind of breaks his swing for a couple of months. You and I, Eric, just need to go in and buy him like a punch pass of 12 lessons that have to be used every month.
Why is everybody out to beat me up today?
Because you're winning. You have the lowest handicap. You're coming off of surgery, and you're still posting lower scores than us. Like, you're just a fantastic golfer, and that puts a target on you in the friendliest way possible. Well, I want to talk a little bit about the best ball format we did today. So best ball is a format where instead of a scramble where we hit and take the best ball from each player plays their own ball, and then you take the lowest score for that hole between the two teams.
Today, for some reason, somebody just made the groundskeeper furious. He put every tee box today like as far back as it could go, and he found the worst ridge on every green and cut the cup right at it.
Did anybody else notice that? I did. There were a couple holes where I feel like the cup wasn't cut super cleanly.
Even not even clean. They were all on ridges, and they were running so fast that if you were uphill, you're dead. There's no dying it near the hole.
Yeah.
If you're uphill, you just try and run it straight in and know that no matter how trickly the pace is, you're 10 feet past.
Well, that's the thing. You were above the hole, maybe 8 feet out, tapped the ball
multiple times,
and it flew 15 feet past the green. You had a great comeback where you saved an amazing par. Yeah,
that was a great shot.
But, okay, I just want you to know, I will play any format with anybody at any time, and so if there's ever a suggestion that you want to do or don't want to do, just let me know.
But I'm not quite done because I held it together really well. I took a triple bogey today on my nemesis hole, as you well know.
Yeah.
That is the hole where I overswung off the tee box. So if you want to know where the pain starts, it starts right before that. And so I overswung on that one and felt it in my back. I'm like, oh, crap. I hope I haven't hurt myself. I think I'm okay. I got a terrible kick. That ball was in the fairway and kicked wicked right off. Yeah. I don't know what. So I'm in the rough in the trees, and the way that that hole is cut, if it had rolled down the fairway, I had 120 yards in. Kicking right, I had 150 yards in.
Yeah.
Just that one kick on that. The dog leg is so extreme that that puts you so far back. So I'm swinging out of the rough, over water, 150 yard shot. I took a 7-iron, and I knew 7-iron was plenty to get there. I knew it was plenty to get there. But that water being there,
you did not want to land it short.
You don't want to land it short. And so I overswung on it again, felt it go in my back again. I'm like, I am such an idiot. And it sailed right on me because the water's left. So of course I'm going to block it right. That's my natural protection. That hole is so crazy that if I had been 5 yards further to the left, that ball would have been just past pin high on the fringe. As it was, it hit that ridiculous mound, kicked under a pine tree. I had to take a drop out. I took a 7 on that hole. The next hole is a insanely long par 5 up the hill into wind with an insanely back tee box. And I'm like, I can't do that. And that's where my morale just started to tank. And Cody picks this moment to start being super competitive.
I'm sorry.
Like one hole before, he's like, okay, Eric, put it close. With your inevitable bogey, that's going to put us up two. I hadn't even put a ball on the tee box yet, and you're predicting a bogey for me. But I'm like, dude, he's out for blood today.
That was on the third hole, man. Well,
I know. And then you got that, and so I'm like, oh gosh, it just feels so. I know it's completely irrational. I know I'm totally wrong. I just felt like the old injured guy being throat stomped to help your guys' self-esteem. And I know that's stupid, and I'm happy to do it because sometimes it feels great to win, and that's okay.
So can I add something really quick? You're right, it does, and there was a little bit of competitiveness. I thought it was friendly competitive, but can I tell you something else? even with your old broken body, with your terrible swing you're relearning, you still posted a better score than me and Eric. Not combined, but individually.
This is true.
So it's ridiculous.
And you guys also totally ham and egged it.
It was great.
You absolutely saved each other on the holes where, like the couple of times where Cody was dead, Eric was perfect. And the couple of times where Eric really duffed one and screwed it up, Cody was on fire. And I'm like, I just had a couple moments where I got a little low and I'm like, oh gosh, it's throat stomp old man day. Fine.
Weasel stomping
fine.
Day. Two little quick things of that as well, because one, I think you might have also been personally a little upset because you knew that you needed to post lower than a 44 to keep your handicap where it's at.
Yeah.
And you knew that there was an outside chance of that happening, regardless of team layout.
Yeah. And like I'm saying, a 45 is not a score that I should balk at. And I just got to remember, I know the handicap's going to go back up. I know it is. It's going to take me a while to rebuild. It's going to take me a while to get back. And you were like, oh, he's all the way back. I'm all the way back in that I'm no longer mortally injured. I am not all the way back in that I've actually figured out a swing. I'll get there. It's going to take me the winter. And I just need to know, hey, you know what? If by springtime, when we're back in springtime golf, if the handicap is a 21-22, that's fine. It's going to be a 21-22. I got a fighting chance to get a sub-18 again next year.
And get back to it. Yeah. I like that attitude. And Eric, the last thing, kind of the round recap that I wanted to ask you, what did you find on the green on hole 6 today?
All right, so hole 6 for our listeners is a par 3. Nothing too special. There's a kick left off of a hill, so it's a very inviting par 3. So we all hit off. No one hit the green except for me. So everybody's getting ready to chip, and I walk towards my ball, and as I'm walking towards it, I'm like, oh, there's a spider on the green. And I say to John Paul, that's a pretty big spider. And he's like, oh, yeah. And I start walking up to my ball more. And as I get closer, I realized how far away that spider was. It was gigantic. It was a mini tarantula, if I've ever seen one. It was huge.
We were all saying, I've never seen a spider that big in the wild. John Paul appended that by saying in the U.S. He's seen bigger spiders when he spent some time out in the Philippines, but...
The spiders in the Philippines are, I don't know, they're like... They're movie poster spiders. Nothing with an exoskeleton should be that large.
We'll post a picture on our socials next to John Paul's putter.
It was
and
the size
spider.
Of a golf ball.
It's huge.
Did you eat any of the spiders?
On purpose, no.
Because my cousin, he went to Madagascar and they cooked and ate spiders. He said they tasted like potato chips.
They don't eat spiders.
I could see that, especially if you deep fry it.
Hey, listeners, if you ever want to hear some great spider stories, I have great spider stories, but I won't say any spider stories unless they're demanded by the public. So
that's fair. Hit us up with the hashtag spider stories.
Yeah, give us a shout out if you want the spider stories. I got them, man. I've many spider stories.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the social media posts that we had on our account. And I got to tell you, it really makes me feel the millennial vibes. and I know, John Paul, you're borderline millennial Gen X. But I just feel so out of...
whippersnapper.
I feel so out of touch on social media. So let me tell you what happened. So I posted about our boss battles.
Yeah.
And... what I'm doing is kind of just going through each of the bosses kind of one by one, a couple of days apart. And we actually had some pretty good responses on that. I posted the picture that we generated of the Green Warden and along with the flavor text. And like one of the responses is like, I'm just nerdy enough that this really speaks to me and I really like it. I hope you share more.
Nice.
And like another person was like, oh, I hope one of them is the dreaded Shankopotamus.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Right? It's great.
Shankopotamus.
But what made me feel like a little out of touch is like, I feel out of my element here, is on Reddit where it's like, hey, here's your post. It's like, hey, you should cross post this into some other related subreddits because they're probably interested in it too. Just built in feature into the app. And so I was like, oh yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And nothing in the post is self-promotional. It's not like, hey, come listen to For the Record. This is what we do. It was more of just like, this is what me and my buddies have done to make kind of keeping stats more fun in golf, is we've added some flavor text and this is what we're tracking along with the pictures.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. not selling anything. I don't even tell them where to like listen to us or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And on a certain subreddit that won't be named where I posted this to, I was like, this probably would be really good here because, you know, people are looking to improve their game. I legit think it was a way that we've improved our game because we have a way to keep track.
Agreed.
I posted this. 10 minutes later, you've been permanently banned from this sub.
Permanently banned?
They permaban like crazy on Reddit.
And I'm just kind of like, that feels a little harsh. And I was like, it said that we violated some of the rules. And I'm like, what rules? And the only one I can think of is about like spammy and self-promotion. And I was like, that wasn't even really self-promotion. It was more of just like, here's something we've done that's helped us. And so I was telling Eric, I was just kind of like, man, we talk about shrinking the game. I feel like that's like not the way to shrink the game. That's going to shrink the game because no one wants to play with you. That's like inviting your buddies, come play this game with us, and I'm not going to tell you the rules, and I'm going to beat you every time.
Do we need to add a new boss to the book that's the subreddit serpent? If you can avoid being permanently banned.
Well, and I decided, I was like, well, I'm not going to stress too much over this because I already have my qualms with social media as is.
Yeah.
Cody, and they don't know what they're missing by permanently banning you. They're robbing themselves of high quality content that they could be ruminating on.
It just made me be like, I felt like Principal Skinner from The Simpsons. It's kind of like, am I really that out of touch? No, surely it's the subreddits that are out of touch.
Reddit mods get a bad rap for a reason. It's not, they could do it to themselves. They're terrible.
Yeah, it's like, I was here when social media was invented, but by golly, it is not the same thing when it was kind of coming out.
That's why I've cut off Reddit completely. I just hate it at this point.
It's frustrating. It's a way to get engaged with a familiar audience. That's the biggest frustration about it. And so, like, we post on our socials and we get a little bit of interaction between like all of our other accounts, like our Instagram and Blue Sky and TikTok. And I post on Reddit and we get some response. And I feel like Reddit is just straight up bipolar. You either get tons of love or tons of hate. There is no middle ground.
Yeah, and I've only ever experienced the hate, so I just cut it out.
But that's the thing. If we would have never have done it, we would have never gotten the suggestion about the dreaded Shankopotamus, which is gold.
Yeah, the Shankopotamus is pretty good. We're going to have to look at that for the round two bosses. But I have to get into a bunker before we can move on to the round two bosses.
That's true.
I deliberately aimed for three different bunkers. I changed clubs so that I would be distant to land perfectly in the bunkers, thinned one of them, pushed one of them right. Second one I caught so clean, it just barely carried it and rolled onto the green. I can't hit a bunker to save my life.
Yeah, we're real crime.
We should add a real an extra box to John Paul's of just getting into a bunker.
There you go. Oh, man. That
doesn't count for anything.
This is what I need you to do. I need you to go one day to a bunker when there's a bunker in play. I need you to go up really quickly and take the flag out of the cup and just jam it in the middle of the bunker.
Yeah, I'm sure that would
and then I'll just, you know, go for the flag.
Speaking of bunkers, that bunker on the hole 17.
Oh my gosh.
They filled that in with sand. It used to be way deeper.
Yeah, so I was in that bunker today, and I stepped into it, and my foot sunk down like half a foot.
I was curious because I shouldn't be able to see you in that bunker, and you didn't seem very deep in it, so they must have put a lot of sand.
There was a ton of sand, and I clipped that so clean that it like flew off and almost killed you. Sorry. And you were on the opposite side of the green.
Do you know what? I was going to say a line as we walked up to that bunker, and I missed it because my ball flew long, and I didn't have a chance, but I was going to wait until you, because you always look down at your ball to make sure it's your ball, even though it's clearly your ball, and I was going to wait till you got down and looked at your ball and say, look, sir, droids.
Whatever. I would have pulled the space balls. We ain't seen.
or the Phineas and Ferb special? No, that's a stick.
Oh my goodness. So yeah, I feel old.
It's time for another Talk Nerdy to Me. So today we have an email that came to us from our contact form on our website, and it says, you guys should cover golf video games like Mario Golf or Golf Story. So what golf video games have you guys played?
I don't know what Golf Story is.
I don't know what that is either.
I definitely know Mario Golf.
I feel ashamed that we don't know what Golf Story is.
I'm looking it up.
Do you know what I want it to be? Before you look it up, I want it to be one of the really, really old text-based RGPs.
Oh.
Golf Story.
It is.
Oh, it is? Oh, we must play this.
Golf Story is a Nintendo Switch game that combines the sport of golf with a narrative-driven RPG adventure.
Oh, I thought it was going to be like an old-school text RPG, like Open Door. Oh. That looks pretty good, though.
That looks cool.
I might need to add that to my wish list.
We might need to play that.
So, some games. I've actually played quite a bit of golf video games. I think my first exposure to a lot of golf video games was Mario Golf. Not the original, like probably the 64 version, I think, is where I really got into it. And they've come out with iterations of that every console since. Golf with friends is pretty fun.
Yeah, golf with friends. It's silly.
It's mini golf and it's silly fun. Yeah. Have you ever played that, John Paul?
Yes, many times. It's a great game.
We've played some VR golf games too in our Oculus.
Walkabout Golf. If anybody hasn't played Walkabout Golf, I need to talk about this for a moment because that came out just prior to the real slam down of COVID. And we were fortunate enough, all three of us, that we had VR rigs at the time that were capable of supporting it. And it was such a relief during just the height of the lockdown that we literally could get together and play a round of virtual mini golf. And it's a really nice immersive environment. And it was like winter time and it was dreary and miserable outside. And it was just fun to go someplace that was seemingly warm and seemingly sunny and to be with friends and to be able to talk with them, even though they were in separate houses several, you know, blocks or miles away. It was great.
Do you have a favorite level or world that they have in there?
I liked kind of the haunted level. I'm kind of more of the haunted kind of guy. I was just going to say, and talks about the immersiveness, there's also the one with the Japanese cherry blossoms.
Oh, it's so
you
pretty.
Just feel so zen.
I love the labyrinth one. That was cool to be in the labyrinth.
When they came out with that was really cool.
So cool.
And we had a great time. So shout out to Walkabout Golf. I mean, aside from the fact that it is a very fun game and it's got pretty good mechanics and the people were very creative that made it, its timeliness made it something special for me.
That's true.
In high school, I played a lot of the Tiger Woods PGA golf games.
I was listening to last week's episode. I'm so sorry. That sounded awful. You were so excited. Like, oh, did you guys remember playing Tiger Woods? And we were just both like, no.
Nope. Well, there was a thing that when you were putting for like birdie or better, and as it was rolling up to the hole.
Didn't the controller shake?
That. And there was also this noise like, and so it's just that's ingrained into my brain, and that's kind of carried over a little bit. Like PGA Tour 2K games, like the 2K23, and now I think they have a different publisher.
We golfed with a guy that made the Tiger Woods noise before he chipped the dum 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 dum.
Who was this?
He was a guy who was paired with us.
I don't
like
remember.
A couple of years ago, I was chuckling at it the whole time he did it. He was 100% in.
Have you ever played Golden Tee?
No.
So that's an old arcade golf game where it has like the ball in the middle that you spin. I've never like sat down and like played it, except when they had a smaller version of the cabinet in Costco like a month ago.
Oh, you're the dude who sits at the Costco and hogs the Golden Tee game?
Well, I'm waiting for my wife to finish shopping. Absolutely. Me and my son go there. We're like, we'll be in the toy section. We'll see you in a bit. Which, this is unrelated to golf video games, but we were at Costco the other day getting some stuff, and they had a full-size, fully functional, real, not digital, pinball machine of Star Wars.
Mm.
Oh.
It was $5,000.
Whoa, that's plenty. I know a little bit about pinball machines. I'm going to tell you that's not a fair price.
I don't know. It was legit.
Yeah.
So other games I've played, the Wii Sports had a golf game that was pretty fun.
Yeah.
That was a good one. We also did the VR. Top Golf had their own golf game. I can't remember.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I can't remember the name of that.
Can I talk about this game for a moment?
Yeah.
I think they've actually renamed that game Top Golf VR. Top Golf bought it out, and it started out as a virtual golf game, but Top Golf kind of bought it out. And I'm going to tell you that I actually really love playing that game and continue to periodically play it. But there's a huge pro and a huge con. And so I'm going to share the pro, why I love it, and then I'm going to share you the con, why I hate it. I love it because, particularly in the wintertime when it's terrible outside, I can go down in my basement, put on my VR headset, and it feels like I'm out on the course. Again, it's very immersive. And you can buy courses as optional extras. You know, probably my favorite golf course on the planet is Pebble Beach, and the rendering that they did of Pebble Beach was meticulous.
Did they add Pebble?
Yes, and it's magnificent.
Oh, we should play together sometime.
Last I played that game with you guys is when they just released Sawgrass.
Oh, yeah. Sawgrass is really good, too, and Sawgrass is fun, but Pebble's unbeatable on that, and we've played Pebble for real, and it feels like being there, and the mechanic of the game is quite easy. You get anywhere near the driver, you're striping at 300 yards in a dead straight line down the fairway.
Oh, man, if only.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So I love going down there and pretending that I know how to golf. It makes me feel so good. I can play Pebble on standard settings on that game and golf 5 or 6 under for an 18-hole round.
Oh, wow, that'd be a
why that's bad is because it gives me a false sense of pride in my game, and the moment I go back out on a real course and hit a golf ball, I'm almost perplexed. Why is this not going 5 billion miles in the direction that I'm aiming? Like, how can I suck this bad? And so it's like the short-term, ooh, this makes me feel good about myself, followed by the throat stomp, you suck at golf moment that inevitably follows. And so, huge pro con to that game.
And that's where I think you have to kind of be able to separate, because honestly, I feel slightly that way about the sim golf that we do.
Yeah.
Because we've got our sim and, you know, we have a perfect lie every time because we're on a mat and we're just hitting it out there and I'm feeling pretty good. The real course is just not that way. Today, I'm thinking of the second par 5, when you were hitting with your stance, kind of the ball was above your feet and you were leaning back a little bit because you were on a hill. Like, that's really hard to recreate in an indoor learning session. And as much as I think they try to get the physics right in terms of, oh, you're in the bunker, but you're still hitting off of a mat, so we're just going to subtract this many yards, I don't think they've got that dialed in very well.
I think what we should do is just go completely nuts in the sim. I'm going to get a big Christmas tree branch. And then when you block it left, I'm going to sit behind you like a tree and mash it into your neck like was happening to you for real today.
Hey, I got out of that.
And then Eric is going to go on the other side and he's going to get some sort of pry bar and mash it underneath the mat and pry it way up into the air so that you're on a wicked uneven lie with a tree branch jamming into your head. And perhaps then we'll be able to capture the essence of what really happens on our golf course.
How about we grab the hose and just start spraying, you know, spraying water like in our faces?
Randomly freezing cold rain in the middle of August in Utah.
We'll get a bucket of sand and, you know, make a sand trap in my garage and then swap it out, put it on wheels.
That would be awesome.
I love it. And just for fun, just once, I'm going to get a giant rubber spider.
Throw it at somebody.
Randomly throw it at people.
Earlier today when we encountered the spider, I know Cody's a little more afraid of spiders than he'll admit because he was taking a picture for our socials of the spider. He was standing quite some distance away, and I was like, you could get closer, it would be a better picture. And he was like, no, the zoom on my phone is fantastic. There's no reason to get any closer.
I don't like spiders.
And so I think the rubber spider play really does have to be targeted at our friend Cody.
Thanks for that.
I used to be a lot more afraid of spiders. I have still a phobia of them. Like, getting in my window wells to clean those out is not a fun thing.
No.
But
let's turn this into a golf video game. Like, We need like a golf video game that's a little bit like the Mario Golf or the Wii Golf, but we need to merge it with like old school Legend of Zelda. So like weird spider things and whatnot will come out and attack you.
Oh, that's fun.
That would be awesome.
That'd be great. Let's do it.
You're hitting a low drive right in the middle of the Octorok's eye.
We're going to call it Cody's Putt-Putt Adventure.
Have you seen the horror golf video game?
No.
It's a VR terrifying one.
Oh, horror VR games. So, I can't do them.
So what it is you hit off the tee and then there you see behind you that there's something creepy that's coming towards you. And so you have to get to your ball and hit it. The longer you take to play, the closer the thing gets.
That's
so you have
awful.
To play. The faster you play, you're fine. And if you don't hit it poorly, then you're great. But the more you panic and the more mishits you have, the more likely you are to die. I watched a thing on it and my boys are like, are you going to play that? That looks scary. I was like, there's no way I'm playing that. That's terrible.
I cannot do scary VR games. And I think our sim counts as a golf video game. It essentially is with real golf. But on the topic of like scary video games in VR, I can't do it. I tried playing Half-Life Alyx for a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Could not do it. I stopped because I'm like, I can't get close enough to that dead zombie on the ground in a video game.
Jump scare VR games just... They're not for me either. I can't. We've talked about how we can make video games feel more like real golf, like in The Sim and whatnot.
Yeah.
What if we were to try instead to make real golf feel more like a video game? I want questing music. So many years ago, we joke about this. Many years ago, I was playing Zelda 2 on my computer. It's got
Link's
some of the
Adventure.
Link's Adventure's got some of the greatest theme music.
Sorry.
It's fantastic music.
We'll cut that and put in the real music.
I'm sitting there playing it, and my wife came up to me and was looking behind my shoulder, and she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm playing Zelda. And she's like, yeah, but what are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm playing. She's like, yeah, but what's the point? What are you doing? I was like, well, I'm questing. And so for 20 plus years now of marriage, every time we've got to go out like to a store to find something, we say we're going questing. And nice. we hum this music as we go around. So I think we need theme music on the course when we're questing. And then
at a reasonable volume.
And then every time I want like a soundbite on somebody's phone that when we sink a long putt or hit a good chip, I want the nice shot. Just play every time, like a super plastic, super schmarmy, nice, like 8-bit soundtrack, nice shot to play.
Or the Wii, like, nice putt.
Yeah.
Oh, nice
and
putt.
To be honest, the boss battles for me is kind of like gaming real golf.
Oh, do you know what would be awful, though, is if you took, instead of, you know, do you remember the Wii, how you had the nice putt for the Wii Golf?
Yeah.
Did you ever have Wii Fit?
Yeah.
That's obese.
Oh, I never got that.
When you duff something, it should be like, that's obese. Shut up, you little piece of...
Or it's kind of like you hit your ball into the ravine, so it's OB.
That's OB.
Tweet, tweet.
All right. So I am looking at something in my hand right now that I'm very excited about. It is our new birding book. And this is something that we'll make available on our webpage so that if you want to play along, you can. You will need to somehow modify this for your own course because this is tailored to our specific course.
And I will say, I'm going to pull my ignorant card out of here because birding was an unfamiliar term to me.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, I was just like, what is John Paul smoking? What's such a weird word. I thought it was a play on like birdie book because we're trying to get for birdies. However, it is very much a real thing.
It very much is. So birding is, it's different from bird watching. So people confuse birding and bird watching. Bird watching, you find birds that you think are lovely and you go after. Birding is different. Birding is like specifically trying to see a large number of species of birds. So the moment you see the bird, you just mark them off in a book and then you move on to try and find the next bird. And this is the essence of what birding is. And it's a huge thing. Like there's huge competitions and people are huge into it. They've got books with all the different species. So birding is a huge thing. And I thought, hey, what a great play on words for golf to have this birding book. And so we put this together. In a nutshell, what the birding book is it's a catalog of every hole on our home course. So there's 18 holes. And the idea is through the course of the next many rounds, like presumably a season, or might take more than one or less than one.
Hopefully not too many.
Hopefully not too many. Is that we will par every hole on our course. And once we've parred the hole on that course, we can mark it off in the birding book. That's done. And we mark the date that we did it. And then if we birdie the hole, there's a bonus box with a little bird in it that we can check that.
And this stemmed from a conversation we had a couple of episodes ago where we said, I don't know if I've parred every hole on our course. Now, not in the same round, just have I gotten at least a par or better on each hole in our course? And we wanted to answer that question. So John Paul created these books for us to keep track of each hole, if and when we par them and birdie.
And Cody got one today.
Oh, Cody got a birdie today.
I did get a birdie today.
You got how many pars today?
Birdie and a par.
So you've checked off two of the boxes of the 18. Eric checked off two boxes with two solid pars today.
Both par threes.
Both par threes. And I got both par fives and a par four today. So I checked off three boxes today. So we're off to a hot start. But here's why I think this is good for the game. I think it removes two obstacles to great golf. Number one is that we talk all the time about the importance of staying in the round all the way to the end. So even if you have a blow-up hole or you know you're not going to get a great round, if you're still playing to try and par any hole, presumably up to the very last hole in the course, you're still in it because you still have a chance, no matter what happened in the previous holes, of accomplishing something meaningful by parring the last hole, right? And so there's some power in keeping your mind in the game even on days when you don't have your best.
And that's what the Boss Battle book did for us as well, right? Because there were rounds where I'm not going to post a great score today, but if I end up just off the green, I can still get a green warden. Or I've played terribly because I'm three-putting everything, but I haven't lost a ball. I can still get a fairway phantom.
Yeah, and every single sports psychologist who's talked anything about golf will tell you this first thing is like, all you have to do is be present in the shot. You just have to be present in the moment and play the next shot. All of us can say that. It's really freaking hard to do. It's really hard to do. And so we need things to help us do that. And I think this is another thing that can help us do
that. That's true.
Gamifying the game.
Yep. But here's the other big one. And I think this is even more important. I consider myself a bogey golfer. Right now, my handicap is a 17.9, which is great. I'm happy with that. But when I step up to a hole, there has to be a part of me mentally that's thinking, on a par four, I'm going to get this in five. There has to be part of me that's thinking that because I'm way too consistent as a bogey golfer not to have something like that. And I think we don't play for birdies. I think we play for pars and then we settle for bogeys.
It's true.
And I think if we started understanding that we're better than we think we are mentally, it's going to help the game. Now, you may think that that's crazy, but how many strokes do we give away? Just give away. There are strokes everywhere. If you fill out this book, just imagine you fill out this book. How does it change your mentality when you step up to a tee box? It isn't, oh, this is a really hard hole. You know, I'm just going to try and put one out there and then I'll hit a second shot. And it's in your head. If I know I have parred that hole, and even better, I know I have birdied that hole, does it change my mental state when I stand on the tee box?
So I have a real life example of this. On our front nine, hole number six, it's that one where sometimes our tee box can get blocked out by the overhanging trees.
Oh, yeah.
And usually by that point in time, it is not uncommon for me to end up to the right of the fairway, beyond the trees kind of guarding the edge of the fairway. So I'm between holes next to us, and it's kind of just kind of this dry, rough patch over there. I hit out from there probably more often than I care to admit.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think three times to count now, when I've had to hit over there, even though there's a whole line of trees blocking my path, because one time I hit a solid 7-iron and striped it and landed on the green, I'm not scared and say, I know that I can hit a 7-iron and make it over those trees and land it on the green, and I've done it 2 more times since that first time.
Yep.
So there is some psychology to, oh, I've done this before, I can do it again.
I'm going
to
give you another perfect example. You ready? The 9th hole, the long par 3. For a long time, that was considered the hardest par 3 in the state of Utah. It's gotten a little easier because they moved the tee boxes up and they expanded the green a little bit, but it's a very narrow green laterally. It's
Wait, which one?
The very last hole on the front 9.
Number 9 on the front 9.
They moved it. I feel like it's super long.
It's still long. It used to be longer.
It used to be longer.
Oh.
They've shortened that hole. It was insanely hard for a long time. It was designed to be a very long iron or a hybrid or a fairway wood shot. And it's quite a challenging hole. And I had some pretty terrible scores on that. And then I had that one magnificent round where I was just barely short. I hit a great shot. I was just short of the green. I called it and chipped in on you and, you know, broke your spirit, which was very satisfying. But after that, I've been up and down on that hole 4 or 5 times. I've parred it many times. I have zero fear for that hole. From the moment I birdied it the first time, when I walk and I step up on the tee box on 9, I will hit the best shot that I can, but I don't really care where it ends up. I know the one spot where it's dead, it ends up anywhere else. I'm like, yeah, I got this. I can get up and down because I have.
Yeah.
And I think that's the power of checking this, is that if we can check everything off on that card, to a certain degree, the pre-shot mental game gets so much easier for us.
I've done this before. I can do it again.
You said that today when you hit over the water.
Yeah,
that, here's kind
I
of
was
like
bring that up.
Yeah, go ahead.
So on hole 16 on our course, you hit around a lake. It's a man-made lake, and then you can, if you hit it long enough, you can go around it. But most of the time, we have to hit over. It's John Paul's nemesis hole. I have gotten over that water quite a few times, and I love the view of hitting the ball and watching it sail over the water and land on the green. So this time I got up to the green, or the tee box, hit and hooked it super far left, and so I had to take a drop. Funnily enough, I grabbed the wrong club, I realized later, because I got the new T-Rex.
Oh yeah, which is awesome, by the way.
So I went to get my 3-wood and grabbed the wrong club, which is why I hooked it so far left. It was a hybrid.
Oh.
And so it was completely different. So anyway, so I dropped. I was 135 out.
Yeah, you were like aimed straight over the heart of the lake. And I was like, you're going for it? And you're like, yeah, why not?
It looked very appealing to me. I didn't feel like I had anything to lose. And I did have trees on both sides. So it was a narrow gap. Pulled out my 8-iron, smashed it, and landed it on the green, and it rolled just off. And it was a great shot. It was a great recovery.
Did you bogeyed that hole? Is that correct?
Yep.
But that's what I mean. Like now going forward, you're just kind of like, that water doesn't scare me as much anymore because I know that I can get over it because I've already done it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was
it's a Harry Potter moment with the Patronus.
When I talked about it with Cody, the next time we do a scramble.
That's such a good analogy for what we're talking about.
It is. But the next time we play that hole, if we're scrambling, if we do the front tee scramble again, I might try and go directly for the green, because being on that drop zone, I was like, you have a straight line directly to the green from that tee box.
Yeah.
It would be very fun to try and go for the green on that
one. That's the visual. And like another good example is the 4th hole on the front 9, which is the dogleg right over those trees.
Oh, yeah.
The first several times that we played that, we did a little dinky 3-woods down the side because it doglegs over those. And I remember one time Cody's like, tech with it, I'm just going over it. And he hit one that looked like it was lost so far right. And we were like, dude, he's totally screwed. And we drove down there, and it was dead center of the fairway 100 yards out. And we're like, oh, apparently that's the play on this hole. And we have played it to the right ever since.
Well, and, we try to.
Well, but our scores have come dramatically down on that hole since that. And it's just the visual of knowing, yep, I can go way over those trees. It's going to be okay if I carry it far enough.
Birdie Bev, time for another Birdie Bev.
All right, Cody picked us for us this time. So we close our eyes? Is that the deal that we do?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is non-diet, so just a
I don't think we have any diets left.
Stay on target.
All right, I'm locked in.
Okay. Do you want to know what it is? Let's reveal our scores.
Yeah.
I gave it a 7.
I gave it a 6.
Oh, I gave it a 5.5.
Okay. I think this had the potential to be higher if it had more carbonation zing. It was missing just a little bit of that. But I didn't think it was really bad. It was just... This feels really dumb. 7 is like average to me.
Yeah. No. And that's kind of where I was. It was very average.
Yeah, I agree. That's exactly how I felt. I was wondering in my mind, like, is this better than a diet? And in my mind, it was like, no, this is just a middle ground average flavored root beer. It was smooth. I would definitely drink this over some of the other ones we've had. I had a mug the other day. And it was just so hard to drink it.
Are we becoming root beer snobs?
I think we are. Was it Mug or Barks or something? Like,
oh, I love a good Barks.
It was just so hard to drink after having some of our really good ones. So I feel like our average is maybe higher than the average root beer.
I think it's interesting that on the non-diet root beers, and we talked about this previously before, on the non-diet root beers, I think I'm consistently lower. And I think that's because, again, your taste buds change over time. And I feel like the taste of real sugar is almost kind of acid. And I know that sounds crazy, but this isn't a bad root beer. It's tasty. I would drink, you know, especially if I didn't have to worry about blood sugar. I'd drink it just fine. But it's got a sharpness to it that I don't appreciate as much. Kind of really acid. And like you were saying, I think if there was more carbonation behind that acid, then I would put it in a different category in my brain, like, ooh, this is a spicy root beer. But it's spicy in the background without the initial fizz hit, and I don't like that as much. And so that's why I rated it just a little bit lower, because it just feels a little acid, and there isn't that really nice, cool smoothness afterwards. So I don't mind a spicy, bitey root beer, and I don't mind a smooth, really cool root beer. This just seems like it's got one half one way and not really enough to back it up.
Yeah, and maybe I was being a little bit too generous because I'm like, okay, it's almost there if it had this. So for the reveal, this is a Zuber Fizz by the Durango Soda Company.
That's a great name.
Yeah, Zuber Fizz. And okay, so they start off, it's not just any water, fellas. Mm. This is triple filtered carbonated water and then cane sugar and then all the flavorings and everything.
So the way they say it's a creamy root beer, that's a good description. I would say that it doesn't have, like, some of them have that licorice kick. Some of them have, like, creamy caramel. Like,
this doesn't have any of that.
It doesn't, and that's why it was middle ground. Like, there's nothing in here that sticks out and goes, ooh, that's smooth. Like, it's
memorable.
It feels like a root beer float root beer.
Yes, yes.
If it had vanilla ice cream, I think it would improve it significantly.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for listening to us. We hope we haven't scared you away with all the talk of spiders. I know some people have arachnophobia.
I'm already out the door.
Look for our birding book. We'll be dropping that on our socials and on our website.
ForTheRecord.com, F-O-R-E, TheRecord.com, or our socials are ForTheRecord_golf.
Like, comment, subscribe, and remember, that's obese.